Welcome, friends, to another episode of 1PM. We're really excited to be collaborating with Becky from Becky's Notes, a UK-based resource to produce an infographic on ACS for our visual learners out there. Becky's Notes bring together all the key topics medical students need to know in a readily available place, reviewed by specialists in the field. These visually striking notes are a refreshing change from all these boring textbooks out there. You can check her out on Instagram at Becky's Notes 01 and support her at the links below. Today we have a special guest, Jay.
Hello, hello.
Yes, welcome, Jay. And Jason will be our presenter today.
Welcome to the podcast. Okay, so to understand acute coronary syndrome, we're going to go through some first principles. The first we're going to go through is atherosclerosis. Can anyone define what atherosclerosis is?
Oh, Jay, you know that, right?
Yeah. Schultz gave you these lectures, man. You better know this.
Isn't it like a buildup of a combination of cholesterol and inflammation leads to like a thing in the lumen in the blood vessel that starts propagating upwards, I guess?
Yeah, that's pretty
good. Bad definition,
yeah.
But...
Yep, so the definition I've got here is a type of thickening or hardening of the arteries caused by a buildup of plaque in the inner lining of an artery, okay? So the plaque formation, then the plaque ruptures, then you get a...
Thrombosis.
Yeah, thrombosis or blood clot formation. Yeah. Then what happens?
Turbulent blood flow.
You get occlusion of the vessel, isn't it?
So blockage of blood flow, right? Like a water through a pipe. And what happens when you've got blockage of blood flow?
Ischemia.
Ischemia, yes.
Infarction, necrosis.
Yeah, so ischemia, and then
death.
What? Death. Death of tissue, technically, yeah. So you get ischemia, as a result of ischemia, you get infarction or necrosis or tissue death, as Adrian said, okay? So atherosclerosis, build up a plaque. But what's really important to know about are the traditional risk factors, which can be broken down into...
Modifiable, non-modifiable.
So non-modifiable, let's go through them. Give me some examples.
Age.
Age, yeah.
Family history.
Family history, yeah.
Sex.
What sex?
Male sex.
Oh, don't stop yelling. We can hear you. This room is like tiny, right?
Yeah, so male sex, age, family history, ethnicity. Mm, right. I think there are some ethnicities, yeah. We browns, yeah. Bad cardiovascular disease, okay? Now, modifiable, what are those?
Smoking. Diet, lifestyle, alcohol, smoking.
Yeah, no, but be more specific.
High cholesterol.
Dyslipidemia, high cholesterol. Yeah.
Hypertension.
Hypertension.
Smoking.
Yeah.
BMI.
So obesity.
Diabetes.
Diabetes. And as you said, diet, so unhealthy diet and inactivity.
Oh, sedentary lifestyle.
But you're just shouting diet. I wouldn't really count that as a modifiable risk factor. Diet. Yeah, gotta be a bit more specific, okay? So now, atherosclerosis done. Who cares about the intima, media, adventitia? No one cares, okay? Next thing you need to know, what the hell is troponin?
Troponin?
Troponin.
Troponin.
I'm sorry.
Whoa.
It's a non-judgmental podcast, okay?
You're saying it wrong. It's leviosa, not leviosa.
Okay, troponin.
Yeah, cardiac enzyme.
Is a globular protein complex involved in skeletal and cardiac muscle contraction.
So is it...
But you said cardiac only, so you're...
No, right. I didn't. I said it was cardiac
enzyme.
I didn't say it was specific to cardiac.
Oh, okay.
You're calling me?
So the point I want to get across, it's a protein in skeletal and cardiac muscle, okay? Mm-hmm. However, there are cardiac-specific troponins. Does anyone know what the letter associated with those are? So it's like troponin...
T.
T is one?
I.
Yeah. So troponin I and T are the cardiac-specific troponin. So... Basically, what happens in acute myocardial injury, the cardiac-specific troponins are released into the blood. So therefore, a rise in cardiac troponins are like a biomarker of myocardial necrosis.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, okay,
yeah. And usually in the hospital, when someone says a rise in troponin, you're pretty much always assuming it's cardiac. It's very rare when I've never actually come across anyone looking at the skeletal troponin. But anyway, so with cardiac troponins... Usually there are serial cardiac troponins completed to observe a rise in troponin levels. So serial cardiac troponins are pretty much a fancy word of you're measuring the cardiac troponin levels 3 to 6 hours apart or 3 to 8 hours apart because you want to look at that trend. So a rise in troponin levels is indicative of what?
Damage to the heart.
Myocardial necrosis or whatever damage, same thing. But it's important to know that the trend is important because it helps you to distinguish patients with chronically high elevated troponin levels because if you just measure at one time point and it's a high level, it doesn't necessarily mean it's ACS. It could be due to other conditions which have chronically high levels of troponin. So that's why it's really important when you're interpreting troponin levels that you look at the clinical context, because there are both cardiac and non-cardiac causes of elevated troponins.
Okay. Elevated cardiac troponins.
Yes.
Yep. Okay.
Elevated cardiac troponin.
What I actually meant was that cardiac troponin levels can be increased in cardiac and non-cardiac causes. Mm. So it's not just acute coronary syndrome. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So does anyone know any other cardiac causes of a high troponin level other than acute coronary syndrome?
Pericarditis or myocarditis.
Yeah. Great. Any non-cardiac causes? The one I wanted you to know was renal failure.
On top of the necrosis?
No.
Like, so, why would you have elevated troponins?
Yeah, so if you've got chronic kidney disease, you could just have elevated troponin levels due to the decreased clearance of troponin.
Is it because you normally have a level of cardiac, like troponin?
Yeah, I presume so.
It's normally cleared, so you don't detect it.
Because I don't see any reason for it to be increased.
There might be a base level you already have or something.
Yeah. So then you get a build-up in a way. Okay.
I guess there is some baseline level everyone has. Mm.
Yeah, okay.
Even if you're healthy. Mm-hmm. So now, the next thing we're going to go through are the layers of the heart wall. They can be broken down, and we'll start off with the inner or most deep layer. Does anyone know what that's called?
Endocardium?
My man, mate, it's as if he's done 7 weeks of cardiology. Hey, this is cheating. You make us look bad. Okay, endocardium. That's the innermost layer, and you can also include the subendocardium as part of that inner layer, and that's important to know.
Subendocardium.
Subendocardium. Does anyone know what the middle layer is?
The myocardium.
Myocardium. And does anyone know what the outer layer is called?
Pericardium?
Epicardium.
Epicardium. Yeah. Okay?
Just different.
Because now the pericardium is a covering around the heart. It's not actually a layer of the heart. Yeah. It's what encloses the heart.
Yeah.
So is that the fourth layer?
There's like a bit of fluid between the heart and the pericardium.
Just remember the layers, I tell you. Just forget about the pericardium. I just want you to know it goes from the endocardium, subendocardium, myocardium, and finally the epicardium. And the reason why I want you to know this, the infarction process starts in the endocardium and spreads to the epicardium. So imagine starts off deep and kind of spreads all the way to the outside. And when the infarction only affects the subendocardium, that is known as a subendocardial infarction. And that is equivalent to an end-STEMI. However, when you've got a subendocardium, the myocardium and the epicardium is affected, that's known as a transmural infarction or a full thickness infarction. And that's equal to a STEMI. So that's another way of kind of understanding what a STEMI and an end STEMI is, because usually you throw around those words without really knowing what it means. At least I did. Okay? Does that make sense?
Yeah, makes sense.
Just the non-ECG way of classifying them, whereas the STEMI and the non-STEMI is the ECG way of classifying.
Well, it's just really understanding what that ECG really represents.
I see.
So when you do see a STEMI, you can imagine in your head a transmural infarction.
Yeah.
Or full
thickness
infarction.
All the layers are affected.
Yeah.
I think that pattern produces the ECG characteristics, like the partial thickness.
Just in your head, you can imagine when they say STEMI, you're imagining a full thickness infarction. When someone says an end STEMI, you're measuring just the deep layer is affected, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, finally, we're going to go through what ACS is, or acute coronary syndrome is. So ACS refers to the suspicion or confirmed presence of acute myocardial ischemia, and it is categorized into three different types. Does anyone know what the first type is, which is like the least?
Unstable angina.
Unstable angina, perfectly. And unstable angina is defined as an acute myocardial ischemia without a rise in troponin and ST segment elevations on ECG.
Okay. Without that.
Without troponin, without ST changes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Really important to understand that. Mm-hmm. So the next type is NSTEMI, which stands for non-ST elevated myocardial infarction. Acute myocardial ischemia with a rise in troponin, but without ST segment elevations on ECG. So you got the troponin rise. However, it's important to know that patients can have normal or non-specific ECG findings. Does anyone know what those non-specific ECG findings are?
Like
T waves.
T-wave inversion. Yeah, that's one.
ST depression.
Yes. So they don't have ST segment elevations, But usually I'd say they could have ST depression or T-wave inversions.
And these are non-specific, you're saying?
Yeah, non-specific ECG findings.
Because they could be for other things.
Ah, I see. Yeah.
Because when you see ST segment elevation, you're like,
oh, it only means one thing usually.
Yeah.
Okay.
It means that it could mean something else as well.
It could, but anyway.
They're like rarer causes of
That's why you look at the clinical picture. Sure. So now the last one, the big boy, okay? The STEMI, the ST elevated myocardial infarction. This is an acute myocardial ischemia with a rise in troponin and ST segment elevations on ECG. Mm-hmm. So on the Notion document, there's a summary diagram explaining all the differences between the three types of ACS. And the way I kind of want you to think about it visually is that, like, unstable angina, let's just say this for understanding purposes, okay? I don't know whether it's true or not. Imagine unstable angina, like 50% of the lumen is blocked. And then for NSTEMI, like 75% is blocked. And then for a STEMI, 100% is blocked. That's the way I kind of imagine my head.
Is that right?
I know there's probably some technicalities, but the way I view it is that they're simply the same condition.
Yeah, yeah.
They're just less different. Severe. It's on the spectrum, yeah, right? Yeah, it's on like a number line, 0 to 100, sure. Okay? So now we're going to go through like an OSCE-style question to really understand the history exam and management of ACS, okay?
Sure.
So let's just say you're an intern working in the ED of Sir Charles Gairdner Hospital, and James, a 55-year-old male, has come into ED today with chest pain. What I want you to do is take a focus history. So forget the A to E assessment, forget the exams. I want you to focus on the history. And what I want you to go through in particular is the presenting complaint. What are the important questions to ask for someone with a chest pain presentation?
When did it start?
When did it start? Time frame, okay? And what are you looking for in terms of time frame?
In terms of ACS, probably really acute onset within like an hour or 2 hours, I would say.
Yeah. If they say they've had this pain for like 3 weeks, probably less likely it's going to be ACS, right? So what else?
You're doing well, Jay. Keep going.
Socrates. Literally, like, this is all you need to know. Yeah. Socrates
for like presenting. Where in the chest? Because chest pain can be different things, like where in the chest.
So
like
location.
Location.
Right.
Whether it radiates.
Yes. So location and radiation is particularly important. So what is the classic sign of ACS?
To the jaw, to the arm, left arm, yeah. Shoulder.
Yeah, to jaw and or shoulder. So time frame, location, radiation. What's the next thing in Socrates?
Alleviating factors.
Before that, I'd say character, right? So what's the classic character of pain?
Dull pressure.
Yeah. Or like tight crushing pain. Okay. Those are the things people usually describe it as. And the last thing I really wanted you to go through was the associated symptoms, because these are usually questions you specifically have to ask the patient. Mm. Okay? Sure. What are those?
Nausea.
Sweating.
Vomiting.
I guess nausea, vomiting, that wasn't high in my list of associated symptoms. Diaphoresis. But sweating. Diaphoresis is really important, or sweating.
Palpitations.
Shortness of breath.
Shortness of breath, important.
Dizziness. Syncope. Yeah.
Those were the main ones. I had chest tightness, but I guess you'd get that in the character of the pain, right? Mm. But shortness of breath, sweating and palpitations, I think, are the really important ones to remember to ask specifically for associated symptoms. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. The last thing you want to ask in the history, which is really important, are the risk factors. You really want to understand whether there's a high chance of them having an ACS. So what are the things you want to ask to assess their risk factors?
Using the first principles, the modifiable and non-modifiable risk factors.
Literally. And you have to ask them specifically, because if you ask them, oh, do you have any conditions? Most of the time they're like, no. And then you have to ask them specifically, do you have high blood pressure? And on top of that, even if they say no, you probably have to ask them, are you on any medications? Because how many times have you done a history where you ask them directly, do you have high blood pressure? They're like, no. Oh, but I'm on perindopril or something. Okay? So it's really important to ask about their medications if they're unsure of their medical history, or even if they definitively say that they don't have any conditions, right? Because things like hyperlipidemia and hypertension, people don't often think of them as medical conditions. Cool? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so medication is important to ask about, like GTNs, antihypertensives, statins, and any antiplatelets. So as JT said, asking about the traditional risk factors associated with atherosclerosis are important. Are there any other things you think about asking?
Have you ever had this before?
Yeah.
Previous heart attack, right? And on top of that, like, have they had any stents put in? Have they any bypass, any surgical procedures? And it being even more specific, back because like family history is a risk factor of atherosclerosis, of things like that, it's really important that you ask specifically, do you know any family members or any parents who've had a sudden death or heart attack below the age of 60. Mm-hmm. Because if you ask, oh, has anyone had a heart attack? Usually someone above the age of 80 has had a heart attack. Doesn't really mean that they've got cardiovascular disease or things like that. And what's the last thing you want to ask in terms of risk factors?
Alcohol. You cut me off before.
Yeah. I swear the alcohol wasn't mentioned, but I think smoking, alcohol kind of go together, like wine and cheese, pretty much. You ask one, you ask the other, pretty much.
I mean, alcohol is always important, but in terms of as a risk factor for cardiovascular disease, is alcohol a risk factor?
It is a risk factor. I wouldn't say necessarily for atherosclerosis. I think it's more for other cardiomyopathies.
Yeah, cardiomyopathy is a big one.
Because you get like heart failure. But I wouldn't say specifically for atherosclerosis. So there'll be at least 10 other things I'd say before that.
Why not? I think it's just maybe not as big as some of the other ones, maybe.
So let's say James comes and complains of crushing chest pain, chest tightness, finding it hard to breathe, okay? Mm. What are some differentials other than ACS which you probably want to think of?
There's a technique that I've learned. It's called 4-2-1. So there's four cardiac conditions, two respiratory conditions, and one GI condition that are quite red flags if you have chest pain.
Mm. Take it over, JT. Why not?
So ACS is one. You said dissection. Mm-hmm. So let's do the four cardiac. There's two more cardiacs that's life-threatening with chest pain.
Myocarditis.
Myocarditis, pericarditis, yes, and one last
tamponade.
Tamponade, yeah, good. And then the two respiratory ones, I think someone mentioned it earlier.
PE,
and there's one more. Usually a spoon between your ribs.
Pneumothorax? Pulmonary edema. Pneumothorax, right.
Pneumothorax, good. Yeah. And then
a spoon?
Don't you ever hear the story where, like, you could just kill someone by putting a spoon between their ribs and they can cause a pneumothorax? Don't try it.
It's a fucking sharp spoon.
You could do anything, whatever. Use a knife, whatever. Anyway. All right, 4-2-1. So the last one is a GI condition that can cause
pancreatitis.
No, Borjov's, I think.
Okay.
Whereas it's more epigastric. No, anyhow, so that's a cut-in. 4-2-1. Remember that if
that
you have chest pain.
That actually is useful.
If it's a chest pain condition, which is red flags you shouldn't miss.
Did you learn that from Oscar?
I did, yeah. We have a sponsor up for Oscar.
That's actually useful. Usually when you interrupt, you ask something stupid. I'm just joking about it. But anyway, they come in, chest pain. You're really concerned that they've got ACS, okay?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you do an exam like quickly. You want to hurry this process up. What investigations are you going to do? Let's start off with the bedside, quickly. What are you going to do?
ECG.
ECG. If you don't say ECG, man.
What's the ECG stand for?
Oh, fuck, actually, electrocardiogram?
Or? There you go.
Okay, yeah, shut up.
Yeah. You should know it.
And what are you looking for? We've gone through this.
ST changes.
ST changes. What else?
T-waves. Non-specific changes like the T-wave inversion or ST depression.
Yeah, perfect. And sometimes you don't have any features. Mm. So that's important to know.
Just, okay. I would like to say something here. You could look for Q waves as well as a sign of previous infarction.
Pathological Q waves.
Okay, cool. Yep, so those are the things you want to look for in the ECG, right? And on the Notion document, we've got some diagrams explaining what those things look like because it's kind of hard to do audio-wise. Let's say the ECG comes back and it shows ST elevation. So you're straight away, this person's probably having a STEMI right now. And when that happens, it's really important that you call a code STEMI if you're in the hospital. But it's always important that in an OSCE environment, you interpret an ECG with a structured approach and always have the patient's clinical presentation in mind. Those are two important things every consultant's always taught me. So bedside's done. What's the next thing you want to look at in terms of laboratory testing?
Blood tests.
Troponins.
Okay. Troponin is the main one you want to do. Okay. Cardiac specific troponins, the troponin I. Okay. Because remember, what are cardiac troponins a marker of?
Ongoing myocardial necrosis or infarction.
Troponin. I'm sorry. I can't stop, man. You know when you read it once the wrong time and then in your mind it's gone. Okay?
You know, it's good that you're being corrected now.
Oh, I will continue to say this. I highly doubt that I'll stop.
Start I was wondering tradition. Why your interns will start saying it too.
I'm like trying to get this point across. Aiden's just smirking. I can't. Troponin. Okay. I'm sorry. Okay. Continue. But yeah. As you guys said before, yeah, so you do your troponins. That's probably the most important in diagnosing ACS. But usually at the same time, you'd take some other blood tests. So what would those be?
Do an FBC.
Yeah.
UEC.
UP, LFTs.
Yeah, LFTs, BSL.
BSL.
Mm. Yeah. It's not a trick question, guys. Anyway, the most important thing to remember is you do the troponin. Imaging-wise.
Chest x-ray,
right? Mm. So you consider AP chest x-ray, but it's really important to know that if a patient has an ECG changes and a history which is indicative of ACS, this step is probably going to be skipped, right? because reperfusion is really time sensitive, mm-hmm. and it's important that you get them to a catheter lab as quickly as possible. But I don't want to ruin the treatment. I will go through that later. Mm-hmm. Okay. So James come in, ending of a tight chest with the pain radiating to his jaw. Okay, you do an ECG which shows ST segment elevation, and you've done his troponins, and they've just come back and have shown to be elevated. Okay, so he's diagnosed with a STEMI. So now we're going to go through his management. Break it down, his STEMI management, into short-term and long-term. And within short-term management, we've got the immediate management. What are the things we're going to do?
Put him on DAPT.
DAPT. Does anyone know a mnemonic for it? So immediate management of a STEMI can be remembered
Mona?
With Mona.
Yeah.
But Mona with a double A,
because
you don't want to forget
sure.
one of them. So what does the M start for?
Stand for.
Morphine.
Morphine. Okay. And that's for analgesia. Makes sense. So M for morphine, which is usually IV.
Oxygen.
And when would you consider oxygen use?
SATs less than 92.
92, 90.
Yeah, less than 92. But it wouldn't surprise me they just give oxygen anyway. Yeah. Even
it's not going to harm you, I suppose.
Yeah.
Surely they would just give it.
Anyway.
If you're worried about ischemia.
Yeah, but technically,
I think it's like give it. I think it's like the outcomes. It's no different unless your SATs are less than 92.
But yeah. I'm just curious, actually.
Yeah. Okay. So M and O done. N. What's N stand Nitrous. For? So nitroglycerin. Yeah, which is usually the GTN sublingual spray.
Why would you give that?
It kind of helps more with the pain, from what I've read with the GTN spray. It's more for analgesic purposes. It doesn't really help to reduce your morbidity after the disease.
Hey everyone, it's Jay here with a fact check about the contraindications of GTN use. Since GTN has a vasodilatory effect, it should be avoided in patients with extreme bradycardia. Secondly, you should administer nitrates with caution in patients with a suspected inferior STEMI with possible right ventricular involvement. This is because they're going to drop their blood pressure.
Next one is A.
Antiplatelet.
Yeah, but...
Aspirin.
Aspirin.
Oh, sorry, aspirin, yeah.
And usually I don't care about drug doses, but it's really important to know that aspirin is 300 milligrams PO per oral. That's probably one of those drugs you probably actually want to remember the dose for. So A for aspirin. And now for the second A.
Anticoagulant.
Yeah.
Heparin.
Which is unfractionated heparin, 5,000 IU IV. Mm-hmm. So usually the MONA acronym you see just has one A, but I kind of put two A's there. So you remember aspirin and
So you only give one antiplatelet. You don't give two antiplatelets.
I think that the DAPT therapy starts later.
Oh.
But you could be right, actually.
Give him DAPT and heparin. You give him aspirin, ticagrelor, and anticoagulant.
Have
and
you
later.
Guys seen it? I'm not, not sure.
That's what I saw.
I've seen DAPT before, yeah.
I saw DAPT.
Okay. From some of the stuff I've read, they've just said aspirin, but it's confusing because DAPT is a therapy which is used. Mm. But once again, once you've diagnosed a STEMI based off their history, ECG, and troponin, okay, you want to call a code STEMI if you're in the hospital. So what's going to happen now? If you're less than 90 minutes away from a PCI-capable hospital, you send them straight away for immediate revascularization with percutaneous coronary intervention, i.e. PCI, in a catheter lab. PCI is basically a fancy word for things like stenting and angioplasty, which help open up the blood vessels, which then helps to reperfuse the cardiac tissue. And once again, really important that time equals tissue. So you want to get this show on the road pretty quickly.
Sounds like our stroke episode.
It's very similar. And the key time point I want you to remember is 90 minutes. Greater than or less than 90 minutes. Mm. So what happens when you're greater than 90 minutes away from a PCI-capable hospital?
Thrombolysis.
Yeah, thrombolysis. And do you know what the name of the thrombolytic agents are?
So there's TPA, tissue plasminogen activator. Yeah. Is it alteplase?
Yeah, alteplase or retoplase are the
Anything
ones I've
that's
found.
In- Plays, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But it's really important to know that you administer the thrombolytic therapy if it's not contraindicated. Because that's an important thing you have to say in an OSCE environment, if it's not contraindicated. And what are the absolute contraindications?
Pregnancy, one of them?
No.
INR is too low.
Hemorrhagic stroke or something?
Yeah. So any IMR's prior high, intracranial hemorrhage, if you've had a stroke in the last 3 months, suspected dissection, if you had any really recent surgery or you've had any recent head trauma, those are the things in your mind you have to consider when you're considering thrombolytic therapy. What I want you to remember for short-term management, you've got the acute immediate management, remember MONA, and then remember the less than or greater than 90 minutes for PCI or thrombolytic therapy. In reality, they're probably a bit more technical than that. Let's go through the long-term management. And with any long-term management, you can break it down to the pharmacological. and non-pharmacological. So, Adrian, what were you saying before? Pharmacological management of a STEMI.
DAPT.
Long-term. DAPT. What does DAPT stand for?
My friends, DAPT stands for dual antiplatelet therapy.
I reckon DAPT's one of the coolest mnemonics, aren't it? Okay. And what is actually included in DAPT?
Usually is aspirin plus another agent like ticagrelor.
What drug is typically lifelong out of those?
Aspirin.
So aspirin, so it's lifelong aspirin. Mm. And there's another drug of the ticagrelor is there for 1 year usually. Yeah. So what is ticagrelor? What's the mechanism?
ADP receptor inhibitor?
Yes. My man's been doing his Yankees, eh? So it's ADP antagonist. And as Adrian said, ticagrelor and clopidogrel are two common examples of ADP antagonists. Anyway, what I wanted you to know was that basically the ADP antagonists inhibit platelet production via a different mechanism to aspirin. They're drugs which work the same way, but through two different mechanisms. So DAPT, now what else? For long-term pharmacological
beta blocker.
A cardioselective beta blocker. Ooh, got you there. Okay. What else? Two more.
ACEs, ARBs.
Yep, so ACE inhibitor, yeah. Or ARBs, yeah. Usually ACE inhibitors first line, yep. What's the last one?
Statins, or like anti-cholesterol medication.
Yeah, statins. So DAPT, statins, ACE inhibitors, and cardioselective beta blockers. What are the non-pharmacological management things?
Weight loss, exercise, diet.
You're right.
Over at 1 p.m., right. We love to say.
But there's a buzzword you got to say first. Dan, what's this buzzword?
Words. Patient words. Education.
Yeah. Oh. Patient education.
And as Jay mentioned, so getting a healthy diet, weight loss, exercise. But I'd say those are like the non-specific ones. If you really want to show your cardiac knowledge, you want to say two specific.
Smoking cessation?
Yes. If they're smokers. Yeah, if they're current smokers.
Cardiopulmonary rehab.
Yeah, see, they always say that. This guy's been on the cardiology ward.
Explain to us what cardiopulmonary rehab is.
I could.
So smoking cessation, cardiac pulmonary rehab. Perfect. That's pretty much your STEMI management, your short-term and your long-term. But for those who are on a cardiology ward, I think this is really important to know, are the STEMI complications. And I've kind of figured out a way to understand and break down the complications.
Yep.
So I break them down into their function, conduction, the ventricle itself, and inflammation. So what are some complications you can imagine from a STEMI in regards to the function of the heart?
Heart failure,
which can be acute or chronic.
Sure.
What's another one?
Valvular rupture.
Okay, I kind of put that in the ventricle part. You're ruining it. Anyway, heart failure. And the other one I put was cardiogenic shock.
Yeah.
Function, right? Yeah. In terms of conduction, what are the problems we're going to think of?
Dysrhythmias.
Branch block.
Arrhythmias.
So heart block, AF. And the most important one to know?
VF.
Yep.
VFib.
VFib, right? Because that's one of the common causes of sudden death. Okay, that's really important to know. If you're going to remember one complication from STEMI, I'd probably remember VFib. And now we're going to break it down to the ventricle. What are some things you can imagine in the ventricles which could break or something? As you said?
Valvular rupture.
Yeah.
Pulmonary muscle rupture.
So?
The cords, the tendinae.
Yeah. You can get a ventricular septal defect, free roll rupture, mitral regurgitation.
Really? You can just get a hole in the heart after an MRI?
Yeah, because imagine the muscle just...
Well, I guess the muscle dies.
Muscle dies and becomes weak and cracks. Oh, wow. Okay. And the other thing you can get is a mural thrombus, which I realize is just a fancy word. It's basically a word meaning like the thrombi that attaches to the wall of a blood vessel or the cardiac chamber. And the last category is inflammation. Does anyone know what the fancy complication which happens after a STEMI?
One of the itises?
It's called Dressler's syndrome.
Yeah.
So this refers to the inflammation of the pericardium post a STEMI.
It's like
or
a pericarditis, sort of?
Yeah, but they say Dressler's.
Sure. The form of... Sure.
I kind of thought of it like pericarditis, I think when you say Dressler's syndrome, you're saying that they've got...
Specifically secondary to it.
Yeah. So remember, this complication can be broken down into their function, conduction, the ventricle itself, and inflammation. So I think the complications is probably more important to know if you're on a cardiology ward. Okay? What I want you to remember from this episode was that acute coronary syndrome can be broken down into unstable angina, NSTEMI, and STEMI. Second point, diagnosis of STEMI is based on history, ST segment elevation on ECG, and elevated troponin levels. Third point, remember MONA for the immediate management of a STEMI. Point number four, remember less than or greater than 90 minutes determines whether to thrombolyze or not. And the last thing, long-term pharmacological management of a STEMI includes DAPT, statins, ACE inhibitors, and beta blockers. And that's all.
Cardioselective.
Thank you all for listening to today's episode on acute coronary syndrome. I hope it's helped you understand it a bit better. Please remember to check out the Notion page and the associated Ankies, because it will just help you understand it and reinforce your learning today.
Cool.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you so much for coming,
Jay. Thank you.
Jay.
No worries.
Thanks really
for
well.
Yes, thank
Hope you,
Jay.
Enjoyed it.
Yes.
See you
yes.
next time at 1 p.m.
Fuck the sharps.
Thank you so much for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review and share it with your friends. It helps us get discovered and helps more medical students with understanding their first principles. Check out 1pm.wiki, and for all your first principles, keep it right here at 1pm.